Hey guys, what's going on? This is Jared here once again, and I am on time this week with my LGBTR upload. Now this week I am introducing Victor Alexander. This is my latest and my last LGBTR episode so far until I, you know, record some more. Victor is a trans author of multiple books in like all genres, include and especially in the romance genre, and like basically all pairings in the romance genre as well. So you've got male-male, male-female, male-male, female, female, you know, all the different combinations you can make out of that. So yeah, so he's very very broad in his range, and we have a really interesting conversation. So tune in and leave me your thoughts. Thanks for listening. See ya. Hey everyone, my name is Jared King, and you are now watching LGBTR, which stands for lots of great books to read, or lots of good books to read, whatever you want to call it. but really, it's kind of a double entendre there with like LGBT, and you know, so I tried to be clever. And I'm very happy to have another guest tonight that I think you're going to love. So let me just jump right into it. Tonight's guest started his writing journey with a story about his younger sister and how she destroyed the world with her breath. Needless to say, his imagination is in no short supply. He has over 7 pseudonyms, plenty of books across multiple genres, and is a trans member of the community. He claims to create spaces where none exist and to live outside boxes. Let's learn some more about those spaces outside of the box with Victor Alexander. Hey, Victor, how's it going?
It's going good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm happy to have you on the show, and I'm excited to get into this. And I know when we talked a little bit, you had mentioned that it's been a while since you have kind of interacted with a lot of the audience. So you're excited to be back out here?
Yeah, I've spent the last couple of years kind of in and out of the hospital because of an injury I got when I was in the Army, and it took them about 4 years to figure out what was going on with me. And I was getting worse, and you know, spending longer and longer amounts of time in the hospital and less time writing. And I just kind of fell off, I guess you could say, the social media map and everything. And so it's kind of good to be able to come back and talk to the readers and the audience and everything like that, and just say, hey, I'm still here, I'm still writing, and I'm not there.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. So we're going to talk about some of that in a moment. But let me ask you, was writing always the goal for you, or did you ever want to be anything else growing up?
Writing has never been the goal for me. I don't even know if writing is still my goal, to be honest. It's something I'm really good at. But when I was younger, I wanted to be president of the United States. And the only reason why I wanted to be president of the United States was because I felt like that was something that gave me a position of power to be able to change the world. And then after that, I wanted to be a lawyer, and my parents wanted me to be a pastor or, you know, a rabbi or something like that. But my goal and my dream has always been to have a job or position or just have the resources in order to change the world and make it a better place. And writing, I realized, gave me an opportunity to do that because I could write about issues that were going on. I could write about characters that were going through things, and I could touch, you know, different people, different lives, different minds and hearts with each book that I wrote. And I'm still changing the world and things like that in that way. And then when I make money and, you know, have my royalties and stuff like that, I can take that and put that into charities and, you know, other things.
Okay, very cool, very cool. So you were in the Army, and thank you for your service. And almost 3 years ago, you suffered your first stroke due to injuries sustained. You explained to me how that experience has changed how vocal you are when speaking about certain issues. Could you share that with the audience?
Before I had my first stroke, I don't want to say I was apathetic about people that were in, nursing homes and rehabs and long-term facilities, but it was kind of one of those, they're getting help, they have family, what can I really do kind of thing. But after I had to go through it myself, I realized there's a lot about the healthcare system that isn't being talked about. There's a lot about people who are disabled that isn't being discussed, isn't being written about. They're being overlooked. And I mean, I'm one of those people now. And I realized, I mean, just reading books and stuff, I was like, nobody writes about, people in wheelchairs and blind people and, stuff like that. They're never the love interest. And even if they are the love interest, people get them wrong so much. And they always make it seem like the person who's falling in love with them is so, they're such a hero. Oh my God, you've overcome so much to fall in love with them. And I'm like, do you know how much energy it takes for me to just get out of bed every morning? Like to get from my bed into my wheelchair. Like I am the hero. Hello. So there's so much that I have learned about the disabled community. I mean, I don't even, I know people have embraced that word, but I call us standing heroes. And there's so much to learn about nurses and doctors. And I mean, I just have such respect for nurses that do their jobs and the things they have to go through. They are absolutely amazing. And I learned so much about, just the elderly people and people in the rehab facilities and how they're overlooked. So it gave me an insight into it. And because of that, I'm a lot more vocal and wanting people to do more about it.
Very cool. All right. So how long have you been writing up to this point, and how hard was it to get back into writing after this injury?
I wrote my first book when I was 10. So I'm 34 now. So it's been off and on for about 24 years. I wrote a bunch of stuff that, whatever kind of caught my fancy. And then because of me being in and out of the hospital, it took me about 2 years to write my last release. And that was the only thing I was focused on. And the reason why it took me 2 years is because, I mean, I would write maybe like 90 words and then I would get exhausted and I would fall asleep and I wouldn't be able to write anything for like another week or so. Or I'd be in the hospital and I couldn't write anything. So it took me 2 years to write Life Is Not a Musical. And when you are dealing with health problems, and something that isn't really spoken a lot about, it's being spoken about now by different authors. But when you are suffering from health problems and you're going through things, there's a depression that sort of takes over you. And it took me a while to kind of realize that that was where I was. I was so angry. I was so depressed. I was hurting. And I was alone. And I didn't want to tell anybody what was going on with me. I wanted to give up. I had actually signed a piece of paper, some forms at the hospital with my living will, and was just like, pull the plug, I don't care, like something else happens. I mean, I'm a fighter, and I had gotten to the point where I just didn't want to fight anymore. But after a while, my daughter, talking with my daughter and talking to other friends and stuff like that, I realized I couldn't do it. There was so much more that I wanted to do, so much more that I had to live. And so after I finished this book, after I finished Life Is Not a Musical, and I pushed through it, and I realized that I could actually do it. Like it might take longer, but I could actually do it. And I was like, you know what? I'm not gonna give up. I'm gonna keep doing it.
I'm back.
That's what I did.
I don't know what happened there. That was so weird. That's never happened before, but I apologize. I think that was my connection. I stopped mid, yeah, sorry about that. So I stopped, we stopped mid mid answer there. I'm not sure if you completed your answer. maybe we can just jump off from where we were. Let me get my screen set together. You know, look, this is very, I don't, you know, this is like off the cuff here. So I'm glad you guys are rolling with me with this. So we were talking about, what'd you say?
Anybody that's been a reader of mine is used to the whole "this has never happened before" thing, so it's fine.
Okay. All right. So we had finished. Have we finished talking about your injury and getting back into writing and all that?
Yeah. They found out that
we're up to that point. All right.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on. Let's move on to the next one, since that was kind of, I messed that up. My bad, y'all. So you seem to have a writing method of accepting all ideas. So with so many different types of stories, one would assume that you never take anything off the table. How do you prioritize which idea to work on next?
Honestly, it all depends on which characters are waking me up in the middle of the night and which ones are bothering me when I'm trying to drink my coffee and have my, you know, morning cigarette or whatever. There are certain ideas that I'm just like, no, I'm not writing it. I don't care how much you bug me. I ain't doing it. I'm not writing tentacles. I don't care if people like it. I ain't doing it. But there are certain ideas that I would get that, you know, I might be watching television or, you know, taking a shower or something like that, and the idea will be hammering at me, and I'll just be like, oh my God, fine. And I'll get the idea down, and they'll be like, okay, it's in the queue, I'll get to it later. And then they'll be like, no, you're gonna write this now. You need to write this now. You need to write this now. I mean, I actually had an idea for a series back in 2014 and told a friend of mine about it. She thought it was amazing. I had another friend that was like, you know, I will do the covers for it for free. This is awesome. And it was just kind of, you know, this idea of where it was like an apocalyptic type thing. And now where we are now in our world and our society, they're like, you should have wrote that book back in 2014, because now everybody's going to think that you're just, you know, making fun of how things are now. And I was like, oh my God.
Oh goodness. Okay. So, well, real quick, I want to make sure that the viewers can see you. So, maybe, I don't know if maybe you can pull back just a little bit. Okay. I think we can see you a little bit better now. Okay, just wanted to make sure. All right, so you have plenty of pseudonyms as well. So how do you juggle being so many different people?
I'm crazy? No, I'm kidding. I think a lot of it has to do with me being transgender and being so many different things, or representing so many different communities. People look at me and they see one thing, but when I start to explain to them, oh no, I am, you know, I'm Black, I'm Caribbean, I have Native American blood, I, you know, have Irish blood, I have Scottish blood, I'm Jewish, I'm trans, I'm gay, I'm a veteran, I'm disabled, I'm a single parent. They're like, holy crap. And I'm like, yeah, if I could inhabit all those things at one time, then it's very easy for me to kind of move in and out, you know, of each pen name that I have. So, and I mean, plus I have an amazing group of people around me that I can bounce ideas off of. My daughter is great for that. My baby sister, Shy, is great for that. Even my mom. I will get an idea and I'll be like, I got this idea for this book and it's like this. And she'll be like, okay, you're getting a little too out there. And if I know if she says it's a little too out there, then it's perfect.
All right. So do you currently make your living as an author? And if so, how could one get to that point?
I did for a long time. I don't now because it's been 2 years since I've released the book. But before then, I was making a living as an author. For me, it was, gosh, I don't even know. It came about because of some really great authors who really helped get my name out there first. I had people like Stormy Glenn and Cherie Noel and Mary Kame and Amy Lane and Andrew Gray, like a bunch of people who really supported me and got my name out in front of their readers. And so a lot of their readers started to buy my stuff. And I just wrote. I didn't, you know, say, oh, I need to put out one book every month to keep the, you know, keep it going. I would just write when the characters told me to write and take a break when I didn't have anything to go out there. But I always made sure that I was always kind of out in front of the readers. So I was always on social media. I was, you know, always on Goodreads and the different groups. I was on Twitter. I interacted. I had fun. I had Dick's morning song that I did every day. Got the readers involved with it. You guys remember this song? You know, stuff like that. And I just kept myself engaged with the different readers. And when you interact with them and you show them that you're not trying to keep yourself removed from them, like, oh, I'm an author, you can't talk to me, you know, because I'm just a regular person. I just write. They like that, and they'll go out and buy your stuff, and then they'll tell other people, hey, you should buy this author. Have you heard of this author? Have you read their stuff? And so that's just the biggest thing. Like, I'm just a normal person, and I'm a reader too, and that's what I always tell them. So,
okay. Cool. So just one more question about the pseudonyms, because I've always been curious about this. Okay. Is it important that readers of one pseudonym not know that you're the same person who wrote something else? Like, is there an effort to kind of hide who you are with the pseudonym? Or is that more of just like branding, like, you know, this author all does this genre, and then, you know, how do you separate?
For me, it's just a matter of branding. I don't care if, as a matter of fact, I would rather people know that, hey, Victor Alexander is also Veronica Victorian, and is also Vivi, and is also Victor Bailey, and is also V. Alex, and is, you know, I would rather they know that, so that way, you know, a child that was reading my book, you know, somebody who's reading my book as a child can go on and then read my stuff as a teenager, and they can read my stuff when they're a college student, and they can read my stuff when they become an adult and figure out, you know, hey, I like reading about girls, you know, or I like reading about men falling in love, or I like reading about a man and a woman falling in love, or hey, I like reading science fiction or murder or whatever. So I put on the, you know, BV is the pen name of Victor Alexander and, you know, Victor Bailey or whatever. I let people know that all these names are connected. It's just a matter of branding, because there are people who only want to read a certain genre. And if I put it all under the same name, then, you know, you have people that will one click, and not every cover, you know, kind of gives that distinction of what it is. And then not every name, you know, you can't separate, because some names are gender neutral. And so you will have some people that will buy a book because an author is a one click to them. And then they'll be like, oh my God, this is two women. I didn't want that. You know, this is a man and a woman. No. So I for me, it's just purely about branding. And, you know, otherwise I'd put everything under, you know, Victor and just be like Jesus, you know.
All right. So let's move into your story. So let's get a little bit more specific. So how important is diversity to you in your stories?
so important. Oh my gosh. Like I said, I represent a lot of different communities, and one of my biggest things is that I don't often see myself represented, and I know that I exist. I my big sister, my adopted big sister, Sheree Noel, she calls me a unicorn, because I am Black and trans and Jewish, whatever, and gay. And she's like, "You're a unicorn," and that's all well and good, but at the same time, there's a lot of other unicorns out there, and I want them to know, hey, you exist. We love you. We know you're out there, and you are worthy and deserving of love just as much as everybody else. Being gay is not a white, cisgender white male thing. Being transgender is not just for, trans females, or it's not just about, white trans females or anything like that. This is something that I want everybody out there to know that you matter and we see you. Because I know one of the biggest things for me when I was growing up, I loved the show Dawson's Creek. Loved it. Was obsessed with it. I used to talk to my mom about the show as if the characters were real. I'd be like, "Mom, what would you do if you had a friend that did this?" And she was thinking I was talking about my real friends, and I'd be talking about the characters on Dawson's Creek. So, but one of the problems that I had with Dawson's Creek was it was so white. And I didn't see anybody on there that looked like me. And for somebody who was already struggling with, dysphoria about their gender and struggling with acceptance about their race because of how I grew up and the things that I saw on television and things like that, to have to watch television where there was hardly any Black people or Jewish people on television, it caused even more problems. And then when you pick up books and there aren't really any Black people in the books that you read, and if there are Black people, they're all criminals or on drugs, or they all have a bunch of children and nobody speaks like you do. It caused issues for me, and it made it to where I was like, well, there's obviously got to be something wrong with people that look like me, because nobody wants to talk about us, nobody wants to write about us, nobody wants to put us on TV or in movies. And it took a long time for me to realize that wasn't true. It was just, a lot of it was racism, a lot of it was fear, ignorance, or whatever. And I am now in a position to where, you know what, I can change that. I can write about these people. I can put these people out in front of people. And so that way, when the next generation comes up, they could be like, hey, you know what? There are people that look like me, people that live like me, and they're in these books. So that means there's nothing wrong with me. I'm beautiful. I don't have to be this skin color to be considered beautiful. I'm beautiful just the way I am. I can have love just the way I am. You know what? There's nothing wrong with me being transgender. I can find love too. There's nothing wrong with me being gay and Black. I can find love too. All this other kind of stuff. So that's the biggest reason for it. And that's the reason why diversity is so important, because I don't want some little Black boy from a small town, small town USA, to pick up a book and only see white gay boys and think that there's obviously something wrong with him because he's already going to hear it in church and hear it from his family. So that's the biggest reason.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, I mean, I couldn't have said it better myself, honestly. I think that was an awesome response. So now on your blog, you mentioned how your series, The Tape Pack, being a bestseller was mind-blowing. So what's the series about, and why do you think it reached such popularity?
The Tape Pack is about, it's a paranormal shifter type series, and it's about werewolf cowboys, basically. I guess that's a way to kind of describe it. And it's about them finding their mates and falling in love and kind of coming into contact with other shifters and other members of the paranormal universe and humans and dealing with all them and stuff. It kind of amazed me because when I first started writing it, I just wrote it on my blog for the people that followed my blog, just because I was like, the characters are in my head, I gotta get them out. And so a lot of people just kind of read it on my blog and they're like, oh my God, I love it. You know, everybody fell in love with Tommy, of course. And that's because he's based off my best friend Angel, and everybody loves Angel. But my friend Sheree told me to put it on ARE when ARE was still up. And so I did. And Stormy Glenn, who's a big name author in the gay romance genre, she read the book and she loved it. And she told her readers, she was like, you guys, if you have not read The Tate Pack by Victor Alexander, you need to go read it. The books are amazing. I felt like I was right there. And there were a lot of people that had already read it, but then there was a lot of other people that hadn't. And so they went and read it. And the first thing that kind of amazed me was the fact that Stormy Glenn knew who I was. And I was like, oh my God, she read my book. Ah! So, and then all these people started reading it and they started loving it. And people were just in love with Tommy, and other people were in love with Richard, and people were in love with different characters. But I think probably the best thing about the series is the fact that none of the humans, or even the shapeshifters, the wolf shifters, they're not like what you typically see in paranormal romance. You know, Tommy is a cross dresser, you know, he's very feisty, he doesn't care at all. Richard is a dancer, and Michael, who's a black wolf shifter cowboy, he is married to Michael, and Michael is very androgynous. I mean, the first time he's even seen, you kind of you don't know if he's male or female, you know, which kind of really works for his mate, because his mate is bisexual. And that's something that really you kind of explore and get into. And even that book, there were a lot of there was some difference of opinions, because the men aren't the ones who save the day in that book. The women are. The women are the ones who, you know, fight off the villains and everything like that. They're the ones who save everybody. And people are like, oh, wait a minute, the men always do it. And I was like, in the wolf world, men are the warriors, the women are the fighters. The men just kind of sit back and, you know, let the women take care of everything. And not even just that, like, let's be honest, if children are being threatened and all this, you know, something going down, women are gonna be the ones that's gonna handle it. Like, we know this. So I'm like, let's just keep it real. But I was really shocked that so many people just fell in love with different characters. And I mean, it has gotten to the point now to where people are so in love with Tommy that I tease every so often that I'm gonna kill Tommy off. I'm like, I'm sick of you guys talking to me about Tommy, I'm just gonna kill him off. And every time I say that, I get threatened. Like, you better not kill him off. And I'm like, I'm gonna kill him when I'm ready for my career to be over. I'm just gonna like write it and just be like, hey, Tommy fell off a cliff and died. And then I'll be like, okay, that's the end of my writing career. See you guys later.
Yeah, so I'm guessing you better not do that. Okay, so let's talk about your one of your later releases, your latest one of your latest releases, Life Is Not a Musical, which is the first book in a new series. So what can you tell us about this book? What's this one about?
Life Is Not a Musical is actually, I actually got the idea for the book from my daughter, from a real life event that took place with my daughter. I had my daughter for a couple of months, and just had guardianship over for a couple of months, and her birthday was coming, was rolling around. And I wanted to do something special for her, and the movie Enchanted had just come out, you know, and she was excited. excited about the movie Enchanted, and I was excited about it. And so I was just kind of like, you can have a sleepover. And she was like, really? And I said, yeah. And so she invited some kids over from her school, and we all sat down and watched the movie Enchanted. And with the girls were, all the girls were loving it and everything. And I say, wouldn't it be great if we all lived our lives as if we were in a musical? And the girls were like, you can't do that. People look at you like you were crazy if you burst in a song all the time. And I was like, challenge accepted. So I said, tomorrow we will live our lives. We will live our day as if we were in a musical. And my daughter kind of gave me this look like, oh my God, please do not embarrass me. But that's my job as a parent. I have to do that. So the next day, when I woke up, I had a little post-it on my lamp that said musical day. And it reminded me of what I was supposed to do. So I got up, brushed my teeth, went out into the living room while the girls were sleeping, and burst into song about it being a new day and the sun shining and all this other kind of stuff. And it was time for them to get up. And it was a song I invented off the top of my head. And all the girls got up, and at first they were looking at me like I was crazy, and then they started laughing. Some of them got up and started dancing with me, and I mean, they really got into it. Like they folded up their clothes and the blankets and stuff like that. My daughter, her face was like red, it was like, oh my God, I can't believe you're doing this. But we spent the whole day that way. We went to McDonald's. I burst in a song in the middle of McDonald's, telling them to order what they wanted. And the people at McDonald's like applauded and all this other kind of stuff. So
That's great.
every so often, my daughter and I will talk about that. Like she'll bring it up to friends that she's introducing me, and other friends that know about me. They'll be like, "Oh man, yeah, Katrina told us about musical day. That sounded like it was so fun." And I'm like, "Yeah, Chipmunk knows she liked it." And she's like, "Whatever, no, I didn't." I'm like, "Yeah, you did." And so I just kind of got this idea about writing a book about a father who is really struggling with his sexuality. And he's bisexual, but he wants to deny the part of himself that likes men. And he starts to give into it. His wife finds out, and he loses her in a tragic accident. And because of that, he tries to make it up to his daughter. And he does it by basically giving her whatever she wants. He's gonna be both mother and father to her. He's gonna do anything he can. And he makes a lot of YouTube videos with her where he's wearing a tutu, dancing around doing ballet with her, making, pancakes shaped as mice, all sorts of kind of stuff. And the little girl's not spoiled. Like, he raises her right, but he does whatever he can to make her happy. And so finally she says that for her birthday she wants musical day. She wants to live the whole day as if they're in a Disney musical, and at the end she wants him to marry a princess. And so that video goes up on YouTube, and there are reporters, just like it is these days. Anything that really happens with these big, huge virtual stars and stuff like that, it gets reported on in a lot of these e-magazines. And so a reporter is assigned the story, and he's supposed to go down there and find out as much information about musical day and the father. His boss wants to know, why is this man so obsessed with giving his daughter the world? He's like, there's got to be something else about this. And he goes down there, and what ends up happening is Nathaniel, who is the reporter, he looks like a princess. He's very androgynous looking. And Deanna, who's a little girl, she thinks he looks like a princess. And she basically tells her dad, Dominic, she's like, that's a princess. I want, this is the princess right here. And there's a whole lot of other stuff that ensues, but that's basically the gist of the story. And it came about because of the own, the musical day that I gave to my daughter. And I'm just like, I wanted to be able to share that with other people, to share a father's need and desire to give his daughter the world. and no matter how foolish it made him look.
Okay, very cool. It sounds it's funny how, those moments in life can really spark like a big idea. Now, do your other books have the same kind of fairy tale kind of quality to it, would you say? Or would you say that they're like radically different?
They're radically different. I don't usually write fluffy type stories like this. All the books in the Witch Doctor series is going to be very kind of Disney-esque, and that's not usually how I write. I tend to write more gritty, clutch your heart, clutch your pearls, break your heart kind of stuff. Make people cry. That's usually my forte. I usually get the emails from the readers going, "Oh my God, you made me cry. I'm so mad." And I'm like, "Yes, I did it again." And there's maybe like one or two parts in Life Is Not a Musical that will kind of tug at the heartstrings. But other than that, it's really fun. It's light. It's funny. And I write that every so often, but more often than not, it's suspense, it's action, it's mystery, it's very sexy, very, very sexy, but it's dark, it's a lot of people having to really fight through the dirt and the mud and fight through hell to get that happy ending. To really have to deal with life to get what they want at the end. But this is a nice reprieve, and it really kind of helped me stay in a good place through those 2 years that I was in and out of the hospital.
Okay. All right. Cool. Now, did I see that you recently released another book?
I have a book ready to come out.
Okay.
A Royal Secret. It's releasing this month. It's my first male-female romance. It's interracial, and it's coming out. And before anybody asks, no, I did not get this idea after Meghan Markle and Prince Harry. No, I had my idea first, but it just so happened that the book is not going to be done until after they got married. Totally not my fault. But it is a book about a black princess, and or rather a black American woman who marries a white prince, and just everything that happens to that. And it's the first in the series. And there, I want to warn people now, if there is a cliffhanger, so do not be mad at me when you get to the end and there's a cliffhanger. I'm warning you now. But I like my cliffhangers. But it's really nice for me to be able to write this. It's kind of a departure. And one of the biggest things that I noticed, and even before I started writing, and one of the things that I've heard a lot of my author friends and reader friends talk about was the lack of black females in the love interest roles in romance books. And I want to do my part with putting black women in that role of being the love interest, being the woman who falls in love, being the main character. And not even just that, I wanted to make sure that black women were seeing themselves as being beautiful, being someone who was being pursued, and I mean, it's the same thing that I do with, black men and other people of color in my other books. And I wanted to write a book about a black woman being a princess. And she is black. Her dad is from the Caribbean, and her mom is from Harlem. So she is black.
Very cool. Very cool. We need more stories like that, there, like you said earlier, there's just, it's important to have types of characters to be out there so that, nobody has to go through that unlearning process that you said you went through and that I went through to kind of grow up knowing that who they are is already just fine. So yeah, and I think, I feel like it's probably going to be very well received.
Thank you.
And the timing is perfect.
Yeah.
So, look, you couldn't ask for more there. So what's next on the horizon for you aside from this book? What else is next for you?
I have some much anticipated books that are coming out, or that I'm gonna be working on. Washington, which is book three in the Sevian Brotherhood series. It's a series about vampire doctors. So I'm working on book three of that one. And the love interest of Washington, who is the vampire doctor in this book, he is a black genderqueer character. And I'm very excited to be writing to be working on that book. And then after that, I am going to write my first YA book, and looking forward to that. A little nervous, but I'm looking forward to it. And then I'll get back to the series with the Bad Boy Princess of Malbidas, which is the series where A Royal Secret is. And then I have to write a book in the Tate Pack series because people have been clamoring for it. And then I promised my reader, Joanna, that I would write a Debater Prince because she keeps telling me, fix Buster Percy, fix Buster Percy. Like every time she says anything to me, she'll say, hey, Vic, how are you doing? You doing okay? And I'm like, yeah. She's like, okay, now fix Buck and Percy. So I have to go back and fix that. But I actually have like two or three children's books that are already done. I just have to get illustrated one and then go immediately. And I have another letter to my husband because the first book is already out. So I have another one that I need to finish and put out. And then I'm writing a nonfiction book called I'm Black. And it's really deep, really personal. And it kind of scares it at me. But that's going to be coming out as well. So I'm just kind of delving into my different genres and pen names and stuff. And I know in my head how the order I want them to go, but there is no telling which characters are gonna be like, move out the way, bitch, it's my turn, whatever. So I don't know. My intention is to write Washington next, but at the same time, I have been watching a lot of Investigation Discovery, so. The Jack the Ripper series might come out next. Who knows? I don't know. But that's my next one is Washington.
Okay. Cool. All right. So where can people find out more about you and your work?
I'm on Facebook, Victor Alexander B, or Victor Alexander. You can find me there. I'm on Twitter at VB. EEB. I don't know. I'm everywhere. I'm everywhere. I've got so many different.
Yeah, I know you have a lot of links, and I think I already have them down below the video. So anybody wants to check out any of Victor's stuff, just scroll down a little bit and you'll find everything posted right there.
I'm everywhere, people. I spend most of my time either on Twitter or Facebook. But I always tell people, if you get on Twitter, you're not necessarily only getting me the author. You're getting me the man. You're getting me the person. You're getting me the advocate, the activist, the philanthropist, whatever. If you just want me the author, stick to all the other ones. But if you get on Twitter, you're gonna see me. You're gonna get me in all my shining glory. So just keep that in mind.
All right, very cool, very cool. Well, Victor, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. I absolutely love the conversation. I love hearing your story and hearing how you came up with some stories. And I wish you the best. And I'm gonna definitely try to make sure that people are aware of your books. I mean, I know plenty of people are, but I'm gonna try to do my part and make sure that people kind of get linked up with you so that you get some more readers. So thank you so much.
I appreciate it.
All right, and everyone, thank you so much for watching tonight. If you want to share it, please do. Please give this a thumbs up if you enjoyed the interview, and please subscribe. I'm going to be posting some more of these, and I'm going to be getting into my own stories very soon. I think what I'm going to do is kind of post like a I'm probably going to talk about my books as I'm writing them, and they're going to be completely full of spoilers, and that's going to be another kind of series that I do on YouTube. So I don't know. Stay tuned for that. But anyway, thank you for watching. And everyone, you have a good night. Victor, once again, thank you so much.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.